Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
Conor Nyland has made his traditional Wimbledon Saturday trek into studio. How are you?
I'm good. Happy to be back.
Bloody hell, what a couple of days it's been.
I've watched so much tennis in the last 24 hours. Madness. I mean, I was saying I was at Wimbledon last Saturday, and I definitely got the wrong. I picked the wrong Saturday. The men's match earlier and last night was special. Like the Djokovic Nadal match was just incredible. And I suppose Kerber Williams thought would be a little bit tighter.
6-3, 6-3. Angelique Kerber wins her first Wimbledon title.
Yeah. Williams, I suppose we probably expect a little bit too much. I had her as the favourite today. I thought that she wasn't moving particularly well at the start of the tournament, but that sometimes happens. She plays herself in to form, and it looked like in the semis she was sort of starting to hit her spots. And Kerber was exceptionally good, I thought, today. Williams wasn't as sharp as she looked in the last couple of rounds. And I guess it's her fifth tournament, I think, since she's been back. And okay, it's her fourth tournament, but she hasn't actually played that many matches or got that many wins in that either. So,
did it look like a little bit of fatigue might have crept in?
Yeah, whether it was fatigue or just also Kerber's a kind of not a good matchup for her. She's such a good mover that she's able to soak up that that power from Williams, and she stood back quite far and returns a serve as well, which is obviously was Williams' best weapon. So,
what's the key to soaking up Williams' power?
Well, with the serve, Kerber was standing quite far back, and certainly in the first few games, then putting a lot of pressure on Williams' first serve, making a lot of them, which then puts pressure on the second serve, and all of a sudden that starts affecting the first serve percentages. But Kerber's an exceptional mover. She makes very few unforced errors, and she was, you know, on par. We've got some stats coming up here. I'm trying to see how many unforced errors Kerber made. 5. That's outrageous. Williams 24. 5 in 2 sets is as good as it gets, and I think that probably tells you all you need to know. She was just, she didn't miss.
Unforced errors is a wrongly named stat in many ways, because they are totally forced errors, forced by your opponent.
Correct, and it mightn't be the point you're playing. You know, it might be a build-up of a couple of games, and all of a sudden you start to feel like you need to go for a bit more. And again, Kerber's movement can make that court look a little bit smaller, because you feel like you have to do a little bit extra with the ball. So great performance, and she's a worthy Wimbledon champion. She's a couple of Grand Slams already. So
yeah, this is her third Grand Slam. She'd already won the Australian and the US Open back in 2016. So it was a strange ladies draw this time, in that 9 of the top 10 seeds were out inside the first week. It was all sort of bearing down on Serena. There does seem to still be this real inconsistency amongst the leading players in the ladies' singles. What's that down to? Are they just very well matched, or?
Well, I suppose you see the cream rises. I mean, it's a Kerber Williams final. I think part of the issue is the fact that it's best of 3 sets, and in the men's it's best of 5. So somebody can play great tennis for an hour and 15 minutes in the ladies, and they can win the match. Whereas in the men's, over best of 5 sets, you've got to sustain that for 3 or 4 hours. So generally, there's more upsets. Also, the fact that these guys, they don't play on grass very often. There's maybe 2 lead-up tournaments, and then they've got Wimbledon. So, you know, they're all sort of feeling out the grass for a week or two, and then they come on. Sometimes they maybe haven't got enough matches or enough wins under the belt, so they're quite vulnerable at the start of the tournament. So I think it's the fact that it's best of 3 sets. There's a lot of depth in the women's game. You know, there seems like there's always 7 or 8 genuine slam contenders in every draw, whereas with the men, and it's almost become a bit of a problem, there's 2 or 3 guys. And it's the same names and same faces for 10 years.
Serena has been the constant. She's 36, going on 37, has her first child now, and she was playing a reduced schedule for recent years anyways, and getting herself into the moment at the Grand Slams and able to peak at exactly the right time. Is that what you expect for another 2-3 years of Serena Williams? And is that possible if she tries to cut her schedule even more?
Well, I think she has to manage her schedule, and something Federer has been doing for a long time now. She's going to try and peak for the Slams. But with Williams, sometimes she's coming into Grand Slams a little bit undercooked, and she's actually playing her way in, because she's good enough that she can actually win matches in early rounds playing at 70-80%. Look, her sister Venus is a couple of years older and is still out there. I expect Serena to be still challenging for Grand Slams genuinely for another 2 or 3 years.
I'll probably ask this about Nadal and Djokovic as well, but if we were to sit down and watch Serena this week and watch Serena from 10 and 15 years ago, how different is her game?
It's pretty different. She's not the mover that she was, that's for sure. She's been moving well, as I said, during the later part of this tournament. But her serve, I suppose, has gotten better, and that's compensated for it. But if you look at the Serena of 2003, 2004, just an incredible athlete. And now Serena is a bit more of a competitor. The serve's incredible, and she obviously has the reputation. So she wins a lot of matches with those three things. Whereas I suppose she probably didn't have the serve and the shot selection at the start of her career. But look, she's one of the all time greats in any sport, let alone tennis.
It does seem strange that a Kerber or Halep are one of these who win the odd major hasn't taken such a confidence boost that they can go and even have an 18-month, 2-year spell where they're totally dominant.
Yeah, that dominance isn't something we haven't seen that. And again, the Steffi Graf, Navratilova sort of era back in the 90s, Chris Evert, they used to have great rivalries, and there was always one or two or three that were a little bit ahead of the pack. And I think Serena's ahead of the pack, but she's just, I suppose, you know, she's getting, you know, well past 35 now and isn't able to sustain it. And the other players just haven't been able to dominate and sort of get away from the rest of the girls.
So the men's final is going to be Kevin Anderson against Novak Djokovic, two epic semi-finals. Kevin Anderson, John Isner, yesterday's, like, is this one of the ones you're like, this is for the purists? Those guys who are sitting watching it bored, senseless, wondering when it will end.
I think like John Isner and Anderson look bored out there. Like it's too much.
Well, they both said the same afterwards. We need to bring in a room.
When you've got those guys saying it, you know, there's no counter argument. I haven't heard a single person saying we need to keep this 24-26. It's great. It's not. I mean, it even affected the women's draw. Mm. The ladies' final started at, you know, 4 o'clock, and they didn't.
And from
know what
Anderson's
time they were
point
going
of view,
on.
The reward for being involved in this epic is
you're sitting in an
wrecked.
Ice bath today. Now he's obviously seen that Djokovic has gone out and played an epic, and he was playing for a couple of hours today. But obviously Djokovic was spread out over 2 days. Anderson had 13-11 in the quarterfinals. If they just bring it in where there's a tiebreak at 10-all, that's, you know, that's enough drama for everybody. Like it's affecting players' chances, it's affecting schedules, and it was a bit of a mess, to be honest, last night and this morning, finishing at 11. The guys go out, play under the lights. It was great. It was a great spectacle. But there was just, you know, I think it was unnecessary.
Players in Grand Slams like this, when they're going deep into it, in terms of their fitness and when they want to peak for fitness during the tournament, are they arriving on the Monday of Wimbledon at their peak, or do you want to be at 80% and then by the start of the second week you've got that match fitness into your legs?
I think for the vast majority of guys, they need to just be ready to go 100% from the first round. Maybe, you know, as I say, the Djokovic's, the Serena Williams's, the Nadal's and the Federer's can play into it a little bit. Obviously Nadal has the issue of going and winning the French Open and then having, you know, such a quick turnaround on the grass. And it actually used to be a week shorter between the end of the French and the start of Wimbledon. They've now added a week, which has certainly helped his preparation the last couple of years. But it's a quick turnaround, and guys need to just try and get matches and as much time as they can on grass, because it's such, as I say, it's such a short season in grass on grass that these guys need to try and be hitting the ground running.
It's a couple of years since Djokovic last won a Grand Slam, since he completed the career Grand Slam at the French in 2016. He's still well used to these type of occasions. For Kevin Anderson, last year's US Open was his first Grand Slam. He's 32. How come we're seeing such a late bloomer?
Well, yeah, it was part of the interesting side of yesterday's match is that Isner and Anderson have, you know, go back to their college days, playing University of Georgia, and Anderson at the University of Illinois. So they used to play college matches against each other at 19.
So they were exciting.
Well, at least they're only best of three sets, yeah. So there's a tiebreak.
It was only the two of them.
But it was it's been a long a long journey for those guys, and I suppose Anderson is well known for his work ethic and just. I suppose, getting better inch by inch over the years. And I think you often find with big servers, they sometimes play their best tennis after they're 30. They start to, I think, they just seem to get the patterns and the rhythm on the serve down a little bit more. And they just probably figure out, they figure out a way of hurting their opponents a little bit more off the baseline. But it's a great story. Hopefully he has enough in the tank to make it competitive tomorrow. But it's great to see Djokovic back and truly back, you know, playing two all-time greats out there today, Nadal and Djokovic. That's what we want to see.
I was making a very layman's comment earlier wondering about the fatigue issue heading into tomorrow. And even though the Anderson semi-final was longer, particularly when we were talking about it when they were in the fourth set, than the Djokovic, because it's just serve after serve after serve, ace after ace after ace, physically for Anderson, is it extremely demanding?
It's easier. The points are shorter, which does help. But I think it's more the mental fatigue for these guys. It's the fact you have to be on for 6 hours out there with no break. So concentration-wise, I think that's what really gets you. If it gets tight tomorrow, it might be a concentration lapse that gets Anderson in a tiebreak or something. But look, you know, he's got a chance. He's got a massive serve. He can hurt Djokovic. Djokovic, unfortunately for him, is probably the best return of all time. And it looks like he's ready to win Wimbledon and be back where he belongs and going to 13 Grand Slam titles for Djokovic possibly tomorrow evening.
To be the best return of all time, is that in-game management, being able to read your opponent, being able to figure things out quickly?
It's just a talent. Agassi and Djokovic are just, you know, they're just able to pick up the serve, whether it's seeing it just that little fraction of a second before anybody else, and then the hand skill to be able to just make good clean contact deep so often. And Djokovic was all over Nadal's serve, but he'll be right on Anderson's tomorrow as well, even though Anderson is such a big delivery.
Djokovic has 12 Grand Slams at this stage, and still the same old names that are cropping up year after year. Do you look at the younger players out in tour and wonder, what the hell are you at? How are you not taking advantage of Nadal and Federer and Djokovic in their aging years?
Yeah, I mean, and nobody can quite put their finger on why we haven't got somebody who's, whether they're 19 or whether they're 25 or 26, there's two generations that haven't really stepped up. I was born in 81, so that they're my generation. I'm proud to be a
part
of
both.
It. Yeah, but it's funny, and as I say, it's hard to put your finger on it. But
I was wondering,
maybe
is it
just like exceptional generation between Federer, Nadal, Djokovic, and Murray, and you know they just probably just haven't been able to get up to that level.
You have four of the 10 greatest players of all time at the same time. So
and the fact that they're all able to collect such a number of Grand Slams, in spite of the fact that they were all playing at the same time. And Andy Murray did well to go and win three in the midst of all that too. So it'd be nice to see him back soon.
Because I was wondering if maybe they had hit a sweet spot in terms of money, basically, where they can live a very comfortable life in terms of how many tournaments they can play, they can take more break. For the guys who are, I don't know, ranked 10 to 30 on tour who are looking to make the breakthrough, do they earn a comfortable living, or is that a stressful lifestyle they're going through?
I think the guys between 10 and 60 or 70, they make a good living, and yeah, you're right, the top guys can build teams around them, and it's a kind of a law of increasing returns. They do very well, so they're able to afford to have a physio and a doctor and a couple of coaches, and then all of a sudden they're really tough to beat because they've got such a good backroom team. But a guy like Alex Zverev, who's four in the world now, he's got the same kind of team that those guys have, and he's all set up, and he just can't quite make that breakthrough. And he's been the big one, I think, that he's been winning Masters series, and he can't make past a quarterfinal of a Grand Slam. Now he's only 22, but you'd like to see a guy like that make a breakthrough, and it's just it's just not happening.
So looking ahead to tomorrow then, from Anderson's point of view and with that big serve, is it that mental battle of if Djokovic is getting the returns on like anyone you've come up against in the tournament, do you just believe in it and you just stick with it?
Yeah, I mean, he's got to get off to a good start, and it goes without saying that he needs to, I think, win the first set, because he doesn't want to be looking at an uphill battle out there. So look, if he can make a lot of first serves, take care of his service games, maybe get into a tiebreak in the first set and sneak it, then all of a sudden, you know, he might get you know, get a second wind and say, look, I've got a good hour and a half, 2 hours here to be a Wimbledon champion, and you never know. But it's tough to bet against Djokovic.
Connor, you've been very good to come in, very patient as well over the last little while. Now you were enjoying the women's final as Angelique Kerber won Wimbledon for the first time, 6-3, 6-3.
Off the ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.